And we're back. Welcome to No Direction Beyond, your Starfinder news, reviews, and interviews podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Jefferson J. Thacker, also known as Param, and I'm joined by...
Alexander Agunis, the Everyman Gamer.
And I'm James. I write Code Switch.
There are a few calls for heavy gear when you're dealing with sci-fi imagine. And while we do not yet have our mecha available to us... At least not officially. There are some third-party attempts to do mecha rules already out there. One thing we do have is our powered arm glory. We can relive our inner space marines, should we need to. But is it worth it? And how do you use powered armor? And why on earth is the Duracell Bunny the official mascot of all power armor companies? We will tell you that and more in today's No Direction Beyond. So everyone... Powered armor, why? Why is the fantasy of powered armor so attractive?
Because everybody wants to be in the Brotherhood of Steel.
I was going to go Jim Raynor in StarCraft, you know, a convict in a power armor suit, but, you know, everybody's fantasies are a little different.
No, listen, I don't want to watch the world, set the world on fire. I just want to start a flame right in your campaign.
No. Yeah, of course, I mentioned the Warhammer, of course, StarCraft, of course, Fallout. But the idea of mechanized power armor is just rampant through fantasy. I very much like how the powered armor is printed in The Expanse, which is a mobile, unkillable death machine, which is not what we get in Starfinder, because that would be too broken OP to enjoy playing with, but... There's lots of depictions of it out there. Besides the StarCraft and the Fallout, any other famous power armors you can think of?
I mean, Bubblegum Crisis Tokyo 2040 pops into my head. The hard suits in that are like really lithe and agile and are less gaudy. Halo as well, similar type of design.
Yep, the Spartan suit would definitely be a power armored suit. And it's really hard to draw the line, though, between some of the beefier heavy armors... In what would be considered a power armor. So what do you think is essential? What is essential for the fantasy for something to be a powered armor as opposed to just a lot of armor?
You need to have a built-in computer system.
Yeah, it needs to have mechanical actuation in it between going from powered heavy armor to powered armor. Like a knight, no matter how heavy their armor, isn't powered unless there is... actuators or something else helping and assisting in that movement.
And I guess Alex pointed out probably the current most famous piece of power armor, the Iron Man suits.
Oh, yeah.
But they would also be OP because they're even more broke than the one I mentioned from the Expanse series.
He just has like 80 million upgrade slots. It's fine. 80 million of them. Also, it's because he's a billionaire.
All right, so let's start with powered armor in Starfinder. What makes powered armor different from other types of armor in this game?
Well, do you want mathematically or do you want, like, thematically?
Rules-wise.
Well, on average, powered armor tends to have about a 1 to 2 point advantage in KAC over heavy armor. In EAC, it varies a little bit more, but in terms of, like, blocking physical attacks, powered armor is the best AC you can get in the game for KAC. That is always and forever, as long as you max out it.
Yeah, and a lot of power armors, not the ones so much in the core rulebook, but a lot of them in armory, also have like a secondary rider ability to them, where heavy armor's rider abilities are usually more muted.
Yeah.
Also, it only takes a full action to put on powered armor, which I thought was funny. Because regular armor is way longer.
Yeah, you just jump in.
Yeah, haven't it puts itself on.
Haven't you seen D.Va dive into her mech and she's like, aha, suiting up and I'm done.
Yeah, I just, you know, I thought that process would take more than 6 seconds, you know.
Seconds.
If I have to take time when I'm zipping myself up, I would like my robot to do the same.
Nope, it zips you in automatically. it pulls you in like on a conveyor belt. And if your pudge gets in the way, your pudge is just getting,
I think I care more about my pudge than you do.
Sorry.
Actually, I really like the visual that the Fallout 4 and Fallout 76 give, where you'd like the whole back carapace just opens up and you step in it and just swallows all around you.
Yeah, it's probably the more efficient way. Or the Iron Man thing, where it just builds itself up from the bottom.
Dude, the Iron Man one is great, especially in like Infinity War, where it's made out of nanites, and so it's just like brr, 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 all around you.
Wait, was that the Transformer sound effect?
Yeah, it was. It's basically Transformers. It's like here's a watch. Now it's armor.
I mean, a watch is armor. It's just wrist armor and crappy.
It's singular wrist armor, not even both. That's not gonna. That's not even gonna give you a plus one bonus for being a set of braces of armor.
I was going to object and say that a watch is more jewelry than armor, but so would most Elmore fantasy art.
Oh yeah,
yeah, yeah. No, yeah.
Anything Ooh, mithril too.
The shade Param throws.
All right.
Also, powered armor has upgrade slots like other armors, but they also have some of them also have weapon slots, so you can just put your gun right in your suit, so you don't have to worry about losing it or dropping it. Just be like War Machine.
Depending on what you prioritize, you might be putting your suit right into your gun.
You've confused me. Explain what? How do I put my suit in my gun?
Well, there's like a port, right? It's the armor slot. So it's just if you prioritize your weapon more, if that's the more important part to you, you're putting your suit into your gun. But if being alive is more important to you, you're putting your gun in your suit.
Okay. That makes sense. Now, I mean, the other part about the power armor that rules-wise that separates it from normal armor is that it has a strength score, a static strength score.
Yeah,
that makes me sad. It is usually a fairly high strength score. Especially with the higher level powered armors, it's usually about where a character maxing the stat could get at that level. Because the first ones at level 5 have 20 strength, and that's like, can you get 22 strength faster than that?
At level 5?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. If you take an 18 in your strength at level 1 and put a boost in. Oh, no, you would just have to 19. Buy the. You would, yeah, there'll be a 19, then you'd have to buy the personal upgrade for 21.
Oh.
Yeah, you're like just behind. But if you're somebody that wasn't prioritizing strength, it's a good way to be able to actually punch something when something gets up in your face.
Which, oddly, these big, strong suits of armor, because they compensate for your strength score, kind of favor ranged builds?
Yeah, or at the very least, they favor not putting all of your points into strength. So it's kind of a weird thing. I know for me, I'm playing a soldier in Dead Sons, and my character is based on Mikazuki from Iron Blooded Orphans. Mm-hmm. So like, I wanted to do power armor because it's like, you know, kind of the closest thing you can get to a mecha in Starfinder. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I can't max out my strength and make this work. Like, sorry, I'm just not doing this. Maybe in another timeline, I would have gone ranged and then taken the powered armor to kind of make up for the fact that I dump decks, but do that. I became the boy killing machine at level 1 with strength.
And it kind of makes it a little bit of an issue as well, because while you can have the prior, like, you can be a soldier and get the proficiency with powered armor without having the requisite strength score of the heavy armor proficiency and all that, like if you were taking it from a different class. But you can't take stuff like cleave, and it makes it harder to carry heavy weapons if you're using them outside of your suit. Like, your suit might have the strength score for it, but you might not personally.
Yeah, you would have to move in.
I do kind of like the visual of this, like, really agile pilot skinny characters that specialize in gigantic heavy weapons.
It's definitely a trope. Like, it's there for a reason. I think that you come to the problem that all of your money goes to that. And especially if you're playing the Dead Sons Adventure Path, money can be really tough to come by.
Yeah. Yeah, there's no real way to reduce the cost of your items. Doing crafting doesn't really do that as much. Mm-hmm. You can kind of throw your players a bone if you use certain items that you say are compatible. You get like a 10% reduction in cost for whatever they're building. But you're generally on par. Also, there's nothing that says you could take items and turn them into UPBs.
No, there isn't. It would be great if you could. It would be. Trust me, we're in a point in Dead Sons right now where it would be great if we could do that.
Yeah, because your max time of crafting is like 4 hours.
Yeah, and I just where we're at in the story, it makes it feel like we're probably not going to visit a shop anytime soon.
I mean, you can, but you're kind of against the clock. I mean, end of the galaxy.
Hey, you just said against the clock. That does it. But regardless, that does make powered armor a bit of a challenge because it is so expensive. It means you are probably going to lag significantly in weapon. Mm-hmm.
And the other thing about powered armor that's also going to be a challenge, constantly sapping at your gold or credits in this case, is the batteries. These things take the batteries to run. There are some tricks to make it less horrible, like putting the backup generator upgrade in your armor will keep most of the ones that only use a charge an hour going perpetually. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, some of the power armors have like a charge a minute. So just keeping those going at any, the practical adventuring status of using those armors becomes difficult because how do I transport this to when I need to use it in a fight? is it would just have like this constant dolly that you're just pushing this thing. Because these things, they list them, they're heavy. They're huge, like 22 bulk for some of these things at the lower level. And it's like, good lord. You gotta just,
it's a lot.
Yeah, just get a hover tram and just pull it on a rope chamber behind you the whole time. And then the fight null starts, says, wait a minute, wait a minute.
Well, what is it? The brawler frame is item level 9. It's bulk 38, and it uses a charge a minute.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. With like 40 max. So that's, you get like...
That's because it's only designed to be used in punch-out tournaments. It's not for practical adventuring.
I mean, you're right. It's really not. In fact, there's stuff that you can do to put like picks and change up the male unarmed damage, but it's like you might have to spend money on an actual vehicle to carry this around.
Null space chamber.
What is it? But isn't there a bulk limit on that?
Yeah, it's like 20. It'll fit most of them. And type 2 goes up to like 50.
Oh, I was about to say 38 is what this one is.
Yeah, it just need a really big null space chamber.
I also like the idea of the vehicle. If you can get like a robotic or computer controlled like flying vehicle, just call in a drop.
Well, at that point, one has to wonder, is it more effective to drop the armor nearby so you can put it on, or just to drop it on the enemies? That's 20 bulk right there. That's 200 pounds. In Pathfinder, that's like, what, 20 d6? I don't know how it actually is.
I have to choose?
Yeah. I imagine if you drop your armor on an enemy hostile, that it's going to be much harder to put that on if said hostile survived.
I mean, he's got a point there.
I have a point many times, actually. You just, they don't always make sense.
Let me see. So a null space chamber Mark II, which can accommodate the bulk of that armor, is 12,2500.
Ouch.
No, the armor, no, it's fine.
The armor itself is worth 14,500.
No, it's fine. You'll be good.
So 90% of the cost of the armor is put in just carrying it around.
Yep. Good. Yep. You got it. That's how you handle power armor.
The Mitsuko Hane van is cheaper than that null space chamber and could carry it.
Yeah, but then I'd have to drive a van. I don't have a Mitsuko Hane to go with the Mitsuko Hane van all the time.
You think he's going to let you drive the van?
Usually, no. She has to be unconscious, and then there's like a large agreement that must be signed regarding what I'm allowed and not allowed to do with said van. It's at least 47 pages because a lot of dumb stuff happens in our local Starfinder Society.
Oh god, they're so stupid. Sorry, none of them use power armor either, which is a dang shame.
Not even Chaplin?
Chaplin doesn't have the money for it. He bought a cool sword.
You know, that's Shoku's problem. I don't have the money for one of those Sonic punch gloves because I bought a cool sword.
Cool swords. I mean, you know.
I guess I stole mine off of the corpse of my enemy, but same thing.
there are a
few problems that the cool swords can't solve.
Yeah. In fact, they're a direct solution to power armor, usually.
Sure.
There is also a kind of tucked in there rule for upgrading your power armor, but it is a very expensive option, but it does allow you to pay 150% of your current suits. Cost to increase it by one eye level and increase its ACs by one. And if it's at a fifth item level breakpoint, like 5th, 10th, 15th, it increases by 2. So if you really like it and you want to treat it like your baby, but you're going to be a sugar daddy with that cost.
Well, so that particular option is really effective if you are using a powered armor for your build that has a special effect that you absolutely need to carry over, because the game doesn't have any base upgrading rules. But if you're someone who really likes that sweet Spellbreaker Aegis, because it gives you like, what, a +2 to dispel checks or something, which is a bonus type that currently does not exist anywhere else in the game, and you never want to give that bonus up, you are going to upgrade your power armor. You are absolutely going to do it. It's another good case where armory really feels like it was the thing that they didn't have room for in core, because man oh man, even some of the core are powered armor cool effects like that don't get duplicated across powered armor.
Yeah, it seems like each one is its own, it is its own individual, and you would get them and lose it. Although there's only like one, or I think there's only two or three power armors in the core rulebook that have that have like effects to them.
Yeah,
I mean the goblin one is just bad. Don't be a goblin.
The cargo loader one's terrible too. But let me make sure. I'm not sure if that one was core, but
the only thing it's good for is moving heavy objects. It's real good at moving heavy objects.
Yeah, just you take the dinosaur, you pick it up, and you move it to a hole.
That would have been really great that one time.
Mm-hmm.
I just slashed it and it bled to death very slowly.
That thing was going to die anyway. You're a monster.
And that also brings up that if you really want the powered armor fantasy, the core rule book is not going to do you justice here. You really need armory. Either the book itself, especially if you're going to be playing in society, you need the book itself in some form, mm-hmm. either PDF or physical, or if you're playing custom, SRD rules from armor. But the basic rules for powered armor in the core rule book are just absolutely bare bones. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Some of those armors, like the battle harnesses, nice, but that's it. You need to use something else, and it won't upgrade. And if you're going to make this a viable character concept, you really need to start thinking outside the box with how you got your gear set up and exactly what kind of campaign you're going into. The flight armor sounds real sweet till you realize that you're basically going to have a Pez dispenser of double A's to keep it going.
Yeah, and also, you can just get implants that make you fly all the time or just constant airwalk at will.
Yeah, that one is really good. You put force projectors in the soles of your feet. So as you walk, you just make little discs of force like you walk on. It's like Elsa in that Frozen True 2 trailer.
And you can do it in the depths of space.
Yeah, except which is much better than Elsa's power. Elsa can't walk through the depths of space.
We've never seen her try.
She doesn't have proficiency in power armor.
Yeah, we need to let this joke go.
Elsa's garbage. F tier.
Speaking of, how do you get proficiency in power armor? It's not easy.
No. It's actually easy if you're a soldier, though.
How is it easy if you're a soldier, Alex?
Well, because the powered armor feat needs heavy armor proficiency as a prerequisite, and I'm pretty sure it needs a strength score of 13, or is it 15?
I know heavy armor is 13.
Okay, powered armor might be 13. And basically, you just take that feat. That's all you really got to do. If you're a soldier, you're more likely to have a decent strength because it could be a key ability score for you. And the soldier is the only class in the game that gets heavy armor proficiency as a feat at first. They're the only ones. Everybody else is going to have to take heavy armor proficiency and powered armor, which means you're investing at least 2 feats, which means I think the earliest you can get it is 5th level, the prerequisite. So 2 of your 3 feats is going.
Yeah, it's the prerequisites are strength 13 and a base attack bonus of +5.
Yeah, so if you're a 5th level Solarian or soldier, you could have it at level 5. Everybody else needs to wait till level 7. It is not grab.
Which means it's really out of the way for a vast majority of society. Only the latter mm-hmm. half can you really count on being able to get it.
It's also really funny that there's an item level 4 powered armor in armor as a result, because it's technically before anybody could possibly be proficient.
Yeah, you just strap it on. You just eat that -4 and you're just the cool.
Listen, it's the goblin scrapper. Goblins would do that. That is in character.
I remember the scenario where that came in. That goblin was frightening, but that armor wasn't great.
No, it really wasn't.
Wasn't there a mechanic to Titanfall it?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was a good scenario. Man, Starfighter really Society is cool.
Yeah, that's a really good scenario. Regardless, though, that's basically what you got to do. So if you are someone who is not a full BAB character, you need to have 2 of your 4 feats by 7th level invested into it. You also need that 13 strength, which is rather difficult. It means putting at least 3 of your very precious ability points into strength. And I guess at that point, you could always do them, but it's still, you have to actively pump your strength a little bit. And you have to pump it to an odd number, which is even better.
Yeah.
And then immediately get rid of it because you don't use your strength and power armor.
And then it just doesn't matter. So wasted.
Yeah. Because you're just, your new power armor is going to be better. It's like, hey, guess what? I took a feat, and now when I'm in my robot, my strength.
I mean, it's like being Superman. You got to be strong enough to wear, pick up that lead-lined cape or whatever.
Yeah. Indeed. So I guess if you really want to be good at armor class and you really want to be good at powered armor, I don't know how you feel, James. I feel like the soldier is the best option to go for it, just because there's at least 2 fighting styles that sync really well with powered armor. Guard, which is I'm better at defending and most of the abilities apply to heavy and powered armor. The mm-hmm. other one is armored blitz, which gives you a whole bunch of really cool benefits while you're wearing armored that most of them work while you're like punching. Don't you want to punch people with your giant robot?
Oh, the armored storm. I was like, wait, blitz is something else. Armor storm.
Yeah, armored storm. Yep.
Yeah, I mean, blitz is okay as well because you do increase your land speed, and that's something that usually gets dipped, especially early on in your tree of I'm in powered armor and I'm slow now.
Yeah, no, I don't think that any powered armor are really good at speed and accelerated frame.
Which yeah,
7th or 11th like that.
And there's a couple like the adventurer's frame that gives you wings, and I think the speed on that is 40. Celerity rings 50.
Adventurer's armor, do wings, eh?
Yeah, it actually, it's a tentacle that turns into wings, so, you know.
That's a very interesting wing. We're going to have to see if that's anatomically correct.
I mean, a tentacle is just an arm, and an arm is just a wing. But looking over the suits, was there any suit in particular that, like, caught your guys' eyes? Like,
what do you think, their bones? Well, I really like this. You mentioned the spellcaster's Aegis already, but I really like the stag step suit because it's kind of showing this the magic fantasy mixed in. This is basically, if I was a elf lord, what sort of power armor would I wear in the future? Well, one that lets me bend reality and teleport around. That's the kind.
So this I don't think it has enough emo hair for elves and Starfire.
Oh. But it's basically this big red armor with actual antler ears coming out the top of it that just lets you teleport around. I like that one. I also like, you know, just the basic ones, like the ironclad bulwark. I mean, if you just want a big old bunch of metal strength and weapon slots, that's what you got.
I think that any suit of armor that's called Jarl Slayer deserves to be given a pat on the back. That one is really cool. I'm also a big fan. I don't remember the effect being all that amazing, but the art for the chitin one, where like you're basically wrapped in shadow chains and the armor is made to look like you're suffering in pain, is really cool. I like to imagine that on the inside there are, it's like an Iron Maiden. There are little prickly things for you because Zancuthon would want you to.
Oh, it totally does have little prickly things inside because it does a D4 damage to you every minute you operate the armor.
Excellent. And great job. Prickly things for Zancuthon.
Gross.
What do you think? What was your favorite one then?
No, I'm not over that yet. You're going to sweat in that armor. And then you're just going to bleed in that. Oh, God. The smells, that's
it's
terrible.
It's going to drink it. It's going to drink the blood.
What? Oh, God.
Is it like a filtration system?
Why? Oh, jeez. No, I guess it's like, it's kind of like Senketsu drinking Ryuka's blood in Kill la Kill. Never mind.
Yeah.
God, that schoolgirl outfit has to stink too. God, people are gross. two suits that have cool abilities and one that's just kind of cool and really different than the others. The one I mentioned a little bit was Celerity Rigging, which gives you a 50-foot movement speed. It also allows your KAC to act as your EAC against touch attacks.
Crazy.
Incorporeal touch attacks, mind you.
It's crazy.
Yeah, because, man, the adjustment to incorporeal creatures attack bonus is not adequate.
No. By not adequate, you mean non-existent. There's a difference between those two words. In Pathfinder, you get a whole bunch of modifications to your armor class and to attack bonus for being incorporeal. Not in Starfinder, you just slap that bad boy on and you watch in horror as your creature takes half damage from all sources and is not affected in its fighting capacity in the slightest. Thanks, Alien Archive.
Yeah, there's a couple difficult scenarios because of that one in particular.
At least one scenario and at least one boss in Adventure Path.
Yeah, yeah. The other one is the Explorer's Cradle that I mentioned. I did misspeak. It is only a 20-foot fly speed and it's clumsy, so you're like a big armored bumblebee. but as a standard action, you can extend and reshape the tentacles on it into a variety of limbs, wings, arms, etc. Also, it acts as kind of like a ring of sustenance in that you don't need to eat or drink while inside of it. It gives you a nutritious paste delivered intravenously.
I know the real reason why you like that. Because you want to shape all of the tentacles into a giant metal finger to all the people.
What's that in the distance? Are you being rude? And the last one that I think is notable, even though nobody's like ever going to see it because it's item level 19, there is a Warmaster's Harness. It actually has a gargantuan size.
Yes, it is the real mecha among mechas.
So I did just like a quick conversion. It is the same height as the RX-00 Gundam Unicorn.
Oh,
really?
Yeah. Yeah. The RX Unicorn in Unicorn mode is 19.7 meters, which is 62 feet.
And Unicorn is taller than RX-78. So most Gundams can be handled then.
Well,
I told you, powered armor is really big.
Well, some of it is. Like, this one actually requires two free hands to use. Medium-sized armor doesn't because it just assumes you use your hands. But this one's a cockpit.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah, also, Gundam beam weapons are bullcrap, so don't bother dealing with anything with there because they're just lightsabers in space.
No, that's because this is Iron-Blooded Orphans. It's not Gundam Unicorn, where Iron-Blooded Orphans actually has, like, real weapons that aren't. Except for that one that is real stupid. But
because all weapons get stupid. Eventually, offense always surpasses defense.
That's true.
Whether it be kinetic or energy, it's always going to happen. God, those dying slaves.
So one of the builds is obviously the soldier build, especially if you go with some of the armored-focused soldiers, bulwark soldiers especially. You could do... One of the other ones I was looking at, just because it'll be different, is technomancers are good with tech and enhancing things, so you could build a fairly useful... If you go with, like, the battle mage tech wizard, the big long-arm proficiency, heavy weapon proficiency, you know, you spend all your feats on getting the proficiencies, because, Lord, you need it. And then you can basically infinite batteries. You can charge up those weapons to be even higher. You can just wade in with haste in the middle of a fight. It makes a good switch hitter, and that's the sort of build when you're trying to make a battle mage. You're wanting to be a switch hitter anyway. And also, mirror image plus power armor means you're basically unkillable.
Yeah, you are the highest AC character in the game, and you also have all the magic power of a Techno Joy.
Yeah, because you don't have spell failure.
Summon your own flank companions.
I know that one of the really popular ones that I've seen is Mystic with powered armor.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Yeah, we have one player doing that in Dead Sons, and we have another doing at our local Starfire Society. We already said Chaplain isn't powered, my bad.
He has a proficiency, he just doesn't have money. He's poor. Oh,
got it. Yeah. So when you get right down to it, being a mystic with a powered armor just basically means, hey, I've got all these spells, and also I'm giant and really hard to hit. And it's really great to have great healing and also be difficult to harm yourself.
And I imagine that the Vanguard is going to make very good use of powered armor in its future.
There's probably a build for it or so, but a lot of their abilities actually require you to be in light armor or no armor.
Yeah, they have about half and half, and they're also really high on dex. Like, a lot of their abilities, like, their entropic touch can be operative weapons, like, for hitting dex, so you might not want to. It'll be interesting to see if people do, because just because it doesn't seem obvious doesn't mean it can't be done. For example, my Skittermander only has photon revelations.
How is that affecting the build, the playstyle? Taking that penalty.
It will not affect me at all till 9th level, because I don't have anything that triggers only when I'm fully attuned. And I didn't take any abilities that have saving throw DCs, so my level dip in soldier to have strength as my key attribute doesn't affect me either. Wow. I am an averagely charismatic Skittermander with a 12 charisma.
Wow.
Yeah, it's weird. It's fun.
I mean, Starfighter is one of the games where the math is so relatively tight, you really have to work to mess up a character.
Yeah, I mean, you can. If you ignore the key ability scores, you will. But if, as long as you follow them and put at least a 16, probably okay.
Do you prefer to do 16s or 18s on your builds?
16.
Most of my characters have aims right now. I haven't done.
I did 16 on my envoy because they have the charisma penalty anyway. It wasn't worth fighting it.
Yeah, envoy is an android.
And once you get to 5th level, you only get a +1 bonus if you're already at that high tier anyway. Mm-hmm. So it all evens out by mid game.
It depends on where you want to suffer. If you're okay with suffering at 1st level, then don't put the penalty in. You'll be behind mathematically and you'll catch up. If you want to suffer at 5th level when you put your bonus in and don't get a bonus and go, drat, I feel so sad, then put that 18 in. And when you put your 18 in your key ability score at low level, it means that you have a bunch of other abilities that you wish were higher and just aren't, put the points there.
Yeah.
Shoku had a 10 con for 5 levels. I don't know if you realized that, James.
Oh, I did, because you failed a lot of fortitude saves that I thought you were going to make.
Yeah, no, it was great. I had a 10 con on my soldier. I don't know if I would do that again. I honestly might take the 13 instead of the max.
Yeah, that's... I mean, you put that extra 1 point usually in something that you're going to theoretically lose, like strength damage, con damage, stuff that's really detrimental. Honestly, but it does depend on where we go.
Honestly, in my opinion, if you're going to have an odd ability score, the best ability score to have odd is strength, because at least that still increases your bulk carrying capacity by 1.
Ooh, that's like worth 1,000 IQ plays.
That's just my opinion. Strength is just the best one to have an odd.
Yeah.
Also, most of the feats that require an odd ability score are strength. I think Fast Talker is the other one that does like a 13 bluff, a charisma.
There's like a 5th one that's like a 15 dex as well. I think that's Shot on the Run.
It might be, yeah, it could be.
There's one or two feats that require 15 dex, but yeah, it's in general, you could put power armor on whatever you want. Just expect you to have some limited versatility in the time until you're able to catch up on feats.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, you can't even do it until seventh level for most characters anyway, unless you're a soldier or Solarian. So you might as well just put a 10, you put your like your theme bonus or an extra plus one in strength, and then, you know, take your boost at fifth level, and then the next time you get a feat at seventh level, you make it.
Yeah.
Because your boost at fifth level would let you take heavy armor proficiency at fifth level, because you'd have a, and then you could qualify for powered armor. You could do it. I believe in each and every person who listens to our show. Make the powered armor angel battle god of.
But I just, I, go ahead, Bear.
But make sure that if you're playing a Paizo Adventure Path that you cuss.
Yeah. Oh, make sure you.
The Dead Sons thing is not uncommon. I've played many Paizo Adventure Paths. But
they always undercut you.
Yeah, you're always behind on treasure.
And yeah. It's really rough in Starfinder because anything you find, you sell for, what, 10% of its cost?
Yeah.
10%.
Because you're selling it for so little, it basically means like your wealth by level is whatever decided to give you or the writer. And if you want a more diverse palette of armor, and I'm sure that someone has like come up with a way to design the encounter so that that doesn't happen, but it happened. Sorry, it's gonna happen.
Yeah, I mean, the for a while you start getting weapons and armor that you're like, oh, I can use this, but after a while the variation in what your builds are going to be are just too great. Mm-hmm. And you're going to end up too specialized, and the AP can't address that.
Nope. It happens very quickly.
Yeah.
So before we adjourn for the evening, we need to talk about a couple of bit of news. Let's start with the
news.
Good news. Let's start with the good news and not the bad,
bad news.
We got a certain Starfinder miniature Kickstarter news.
Which we have to talk about that?
We have to talk about that.
Okay. Let's talk about the good thing better, though.
Okay, so good news right now is that the... is a new Humble Bundle available for Pathfinder that includes the Starfinder core rulebook at the top tier, which is only $18, which basically gets you over 40 books for Pathfinder, including all the hardbacks that matter.
Oh, how can I go to a wilderness like that?
Okay. Alternate Wilderness is not included. Sorry. Actually, I really like Alternate Wilderness. Ultimate Wilderness, not Alternate. Alternate Wilderness is the city.
Has that one been reprinted yet? Because that one will be great when they reprint it.
The errata fixed a lot of it, but it is, I actually like that book, except for the, you know, the
Keystone,
the shifter stuff. but then at least if you play with the errata, then also Wilderness Origins, the shifter is playable and maybe not optimal fun. Yep. But that's besides the point. But this thing includes...
I thought you said no bad stuff. We were talking about good things.
Yeah, good things is this Humble Bundle is like $18, gets you like 40-some books for Pathfinder, and will get you the Starfinder core rulebook along with that, which is a lot of gaming goodness. It's a great time to do that, to complete any collections. Actually, I'm surprised the price is so low on this, even given the current state of things. Like, you know, Pathfinder 2 is coming out, but still, I would think a lot of people would want to fill out their Pathfinder 1 missing books. So I'm surprised that the price is as low as it is. Still, it's a cool thing. It's only going to be going on for a little while on Humble Bundle. So if that's something that interests you, check that out. Next up, we got to talk about Ninja Division Starfinder Kickstarter. They're behind, to say the least. They have also delivered some models to some people and not all the models to all the people. Some people have not even gotten any models, and some people have gotten some models. Nobody has gotten all the models because not all the models were made. There have been some statements put out about the situation. The manufacturer has put out a statement that... they haven't been paid for their work, and therefore are waiting for payment before they can release the models that they say are all finished and sitting in a warehouse. And Ninja Division, they put out a further statement on the state of all their Kickstarters, with bar charts and pie charts and everything, but it all breaks down to the fact that they don't have enough money to finish, but they aren't giving up. They've laid off all but three of their staff because they can't pay anybody right now. And they're looking for ways to complete it. They haven't declared bankruptcy yet, but if you look at all those bar charts, they owe a tremendous amount of money, need more money to be able to finish it, and has no money right now. And so it looks kind of bleak on the horizon for the official Starfinder miniatures.
Yeah, which is a shame, because apparently they're all made. Every single one of them. That's what the warehouse people were saying, right?
Yeah, the warehouse said that manufacturing was finished. Yeah.
It's very Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom. Eventually you're going to just find it in a warehouse, and you're just going to see all these minis.
Which makes me wonder what's going to happen to those minis, because, like, the legal, who owns them is probably, like, the we're factory. Not lawyers and everything, but if they haven't been paid for them, the factory probably owns them. I don't know what will happen to the manufactured minis that the backers paid for.
Me either. It's a very weird situation, and there's a lot of negative emotions surrounding this, because not only is Ninja Division super late, but they've been relatively silent about the whole issue. As a matter of fact, the fact that this statement came out a couple of weeks after the Supreme Court of like Idaho or Wisconsin or something, whatever company that they're based in, like whenever they got involved, like they all of a sudden, oh, here's this state of how things are going.
Right. The legislature was looking at them. There's some articles that came out recently detailing the fact that they raised millions of dollars on Kickstarter and haven't delivered their products. This is not the only Kickstarter. They have several Kickstarters focused on miniatures that they have not delivered. And part of the criticism that came out when this one was coming around, it was they were not delivering their product at the time, is why were they starting up more Kickstarters before delivering the ones that they were already behind on.
Without knowing much about what's going on, it almost sounds like they were trying to borrow money.
Well, we've got to be careful with anything we say as a news organization there, Alex. We do not know the details of or motivations behind this. We just know what was released in the official statements, and we have to be careful about what we say otherwise. But that's the situation. It kind of sucks. We hate it for anybody that's pledged in on that.
Did either of you two pledge in on that?
No.
It was too expensive. And
I made my own Formian mini. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're doing this.
Dude, that was sweet.
You're missing a leg. What happened? Did you?
No, it's pointing outward.
Oh, there is. Okay.
Yeah, it's going to have to go to the tripod.
I was going to ask if you got like lost in battle or something.
No, I'm going to have to tripod it.
I'm still slowly painting my Skittermander. Look, here he is looking.
Aww.
He's got his giant glowy hammer. It's going to be great.
Kind of looks like Garfield.
It is that shade of red. Yeah, it's very similar. I'm going to try to make it like bright red and then pink highlights on it, like the art look.
Okay.
My inspiration is Quonks. No, Kaz from Skittershot, the red one.
Hmm.
Also, Skittershot looks so good, guys. Let's end on that. Skittershot looks so good.
Great. I can't
wait. Or not Skittershot. It's Skitter Crash, the new one. But I think the cover art on that one is great. I'm a sucker for good action pieces, and it's not every day that you see a 5-character action piece on a free RPG module. Like, yeah, we get them with the goblins, but like goblins are really, they kind of all look copy pasted. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like they're all very similar in design, and for the Skittermanders, they're all very clearly different. The only time they weren't depicted as being different is the Christmas card, where they're all wearing the same Santa Claus outfit, which you're like, okay, it's Christmas, whatever. But like, they have such distinct designs that I was like, oh my gosh, this is a really impressive piece of art. Good job. Mm-hmm. I'm assuming Jason Keeley and friends.
And with that said, I think it's time to wrap up this episode. If you want to follow more No Direction content and more episodes of No Direction Beyond, you can do so at nodirectionpodcast.com. And while you're there, you can check out our link to our Discord server, where you will find the most chill and coolest place to talk about Starfinder, Pathfinder, anything Paizo related, and also now including video games and anime as our various geeky influences leak throughout the community.
Don't forget that if you're super into our last segment, which was Create Demiplanet, we have a whole channel devoted to Create Demiplanet on our Kickstarter too, where we talk about stuff that may or may not end up in the setting, because we like a lot of what we don't want to take everything.
Right. So totally.
Yeah, join us. Yes, join us.
That's the best place to talk to us if you would do suggestions about Create Demi. Though you could, of course, contact us on our Facebook page at facebook.com/nodirection or twitter.com/nodirection. We appreciate that. Also, one of the other things we appreciate, our Patreon backer. You all make this possible. If you wish to support the show, including getting some fun benefits and access to our insider, that's the insider level or higher, you can go to our Patreon, which is linked at nodirectionpodcast.com over on the right. Click the Patreon link, or just Google search No Direction Patreon. You'll find it. And any contributions there you to help the show and help us expand and continue our content, including upcoming art for our other podcasts, if let's say Glanville looks like, or Lily on Adventurous, and of course art for other upcoming projects.
Mm-hmm.
Also, you know, microphone, server costs, all the things that make this show possible. And
yeah, the bank account. Param just showed off his cool little like screen switcher device the other day, with where he's got like buttons and you press the button and it like puts like overlays. I don't know how it works. It's magic, okay? You're the technomancer here.
That's
not
the
me.
Tiniest purchase we've made.
But it's so cool. It doesn't matter that it's tiny. It's like how this thing cost me like $10, but it's great for holding things. I love it. I also love your little screen switch thingy.
Yep. All right, everyone. With that, we're going to sign out. Go beyond with No Direction.